From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 16th day of May, 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Matt Bennett will be here from Ag Market Net to talk about what's happening on his farm, or more likely, what's not happening, and his expectations as it's related to old crop corn sales. And then we'll take up the weather forecast. It doesn't look pretty. We'll discuss all of that with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago as we wrap up our time together. And along the way, we'll check in on the Kansas wheat crop. That really is one of the things that started the drive higher for corn earlier in the week. The K-State University Extension Wheat Specialist will join us to give us an update on where that crop is and what its potential looks like today, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Thursday afternoon. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan. Is it warm down there?
Yeah, we're warming up. We're starting to creep up into the upper 80s, so you know June is not too far away. We do still have rain in the forecast. Everything's nice and green. I've been mowing all week, and we got a big rain system coming in this weekend, and all the guys that make hay down here are hoping they miss it, but I don't think they're going to miss it, just like probably the farmers up there are hoping that they miss some of this rain too. And the weather maps indicate that they're probably not going to miss it. So it is a wet one, no matter where you're at, I guess. Well, if for the technicians, and I mean the guys that look at chart patterns and all of the mathematical formulas and statistics and this kind of stuff of where prices are headed, they're all going to be terribly bullish. I mean, they can visualize all kinds of moves to the upsides in here. Now, the crazy talk hasn't started yet, so, you know, I think we got some room to go because we're going to have to go, you know, when we're making the top, we're going to hear a lot of crazy stuff. You know, we're going to lose 10 million acres of corn, you know, national average yield is going to fall down to 160 bushels or 150 bushels. So we got a phase to go through yet, but technically, this market is really, you know, I think the stars are aligning for a pretty decent move. And, you know, for people that, you know, looks at just plain statistics, you know, the odds of having corn and soybeans make their calendar year highs during the first 3 to 4 months of the year is pretty skinny. There's only about 20 to 25% of the time you make a calendar high during the first 3 months of the year. And that's kind of what we've done so far this year. Most of the highs are, you know, after June 1st. And you have a tremendous, about 50% of your highs, calendar year highs in corn and soybeans on November beans and December corn are usually made during that June-July timeframe. And then, you know, 25% of your highs are made in short crop years, and that's made then in the fall months during the, you know, September, October, November type thing. So when you look at statistics, you got to say that the odds were still in favor that we would have some kind of May-June rally. And, of course, it's turning out now to be a delayed planting rally and a severe one. Especially if some of these weather model maps on precipitation amounts are verified Sunday night, you're going to hear a lot of crazy talk in the marketplace. Now, first thing I noticed, you know, we started off the week with the daily reversal to the upside on corn, and then we followed through, then soybeans caught on fire. And so we're in the position to have weekly reversals. Corn is already in good position for a monthly reversal. And then when if you go the next step, it's in position for a quarterly reversal to the upside because, you know, that March stocks report had markets tumble on the last trading day of March. So we're in good shape here to have a quarterly reversal to the upside on corn. I know we got a lot of time to go through. We got the June report to go through before we get to the end of the quarter. But price action is very encouraging to the technician. So, I mean, initially, I would say so far, you know, the highs that we've had, yearly highs in corn, these corn's been, what, that 405, 406, I don't know, something like that. That looks, you know, the odds would say that that's going to be taken out. And once you take that out, well, then it's going to, then we're going to go after the contract high, which is like on D's corn is 424, I think, or something like that. That was made last fall or a year ago. So, you know, corn looks like we're going to at least try to go through this $4 area. Now, when you look at a lead futures chart, like on corn, we've been basically going sideways here between 320 and 420. Basically since 2014. So we've been going about 5 years here, 6 years going sideways. Technicians will really get excited if we start busting above that sideways trading formation. We start getting closes above 420, 425. We actually kind of got a double top there around 440 that was made back in 15 and 16. But we start climbing above 425, your technicians then are going to start talking about some serious retracements back toward that 12 high. And, you know, like a 38% retracement would take you back to 517. A 50% retracement would take you back to somewhere around 580. And over time, corn has a tendency to go to those 50% retracement levels, whether they're on the way up or on the way down. They're kind of a magnet to the market. So technicians, if we start seeing some closes above this 4.25, you know, on a lead futures contract, you're going to hear an awful lot of, you know, $5 corn talk. You may even hear some crazier talk than that. But that's all, you know, in the cards.
All the numbers you talk about will keep the corn planters rolling. However, we have a long ways before we get to those numbers. Is the CME group in a position, the traders, do you think, are they prepared to go that route yet?
Oh, I think, you know, nobody knows for sure. But if these maps that I see on Twitter are verified, you know, 5 and 10 inches of rain through the major heart of the Corn Belt, if that is verified next week, yeah, I think it'll be Panic City. That would be my guess, because you'd be talking about some serious flooding, even on the acres that are planted, let alone the acres that's not even planted. And you would then begin to hear the crazy talk that, you know, maybe corn plantings may fall as low as 82 million or 84 million. So then the market, then the function of the market then will be to try to rally to encourage farmers to plant past that prevent plant date. And we'll go into that delayed planting deal where they'll lose a little bit of their insurance for 10 days or something like that. So the market will try to get those acres planted. And that'll be the interesting thing to watch. If that happens, you know, I know I've been around the markets and I know weather maps can change overnight.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it. We need to wrap up. That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org. In today's agricultural news, Ag Secretary Sonny Perdue said yesterday that the Trump administration is considering $15 billion to $20 billion in assistance for ag producers feeling the economic pain from President Donald Trump's escalating trade feud with China. Perdue said USDA's Trade Aid 2.0 plan is still in the works, but it's likely to include direct payments to producers and potentially another commodity purchase program similar to last year's trade relief program for 2018 production. He said the aid will fully comply with WTO limits on agricultural subsidies. The department is also taking into account feedback from the first round of assistance. Perdue added certain commodity groups, corn and wheat growers, saw the direct payment rates as, quote, inadequate to offset their losses stemming from the trade war. We'll look at the history of what happened with that program, and we'll try to learn from it, improve it, and address some of those stakeholder comments, he told reporters on a conference call. A USDA spokesman said the department so far has paid $8.5 billion in direct aid to farmers under last year's program. Well, House Ag Chairman Colin Peterson, a Democrat from Minnesota, kicked off the Conservation Subcommittee's first hearing yesterday by blasting Farm Service Agency Administrator Richard Fortas for opening up Conservation Reserve Program continuous signups ahead of general signups, the two ways farmers could apply to participate in the CRP program. The continuous signup process operates on a rolling basis and is designed to protect the most environmentally sensitive land. The general signup format is competitive and is only offered during set periods. Threatening to sue USDA, Peterson said he does not believe the department has the authority to open signups before guidance in line with new farm bill provisions is issued. Peterson says he's concerned farmers will be confused by the staggered signup process and that it will result in more farmers participating in the continuous program. Peterson has long been a fan of general signups. CRP continuous signups will prioritize land devoted to water quality practices, such as establishing grassed waterways, riparian buffers, and filter strips, USDA said when announcing the sign-up period that will open in June. And finally today, the Kansas State Extension wheat specialist, Romolo Lolato, is concerned about wheat in his state. He says it's running about 4 weeks behind.
You go both ways. The potential is good, but the crop is behind in development. So if we turn to go through heat stress, that might be a pretty big concern on our yields. In some fields where waterlogged conditions are already existing, all that rain is also going to can be detrimental for our yields there.
It's Romolo Lolato. He is a wheat specialist from K-State University and is concerned that the wheat crop, which is now about 4 weeks behind because of cool conditions, might suffer from additional heat during grain fill and, of course, the potential for problems related to rainfall that's coming in the next 2.5 weeks. You can hear more from him on our website eventually this afternoon at willag.org. I'm Todd Gleason. Let's check now the cash grain situation. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net now joins us from Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks so much for being with us. I take it you're still not moving yet, is that right?
Well, we're going to try it here this afternoon. We worked a little bit of ground there yesterday evening, and it was a little heavy yet. We're hoping that we just haven't had good drying days. So we're hoping this sun today really does us some favors, and maybe we're able to get out there and go. We may end up working it and planting it tomorrow, but regardless, we're going to try to get going.
It seems to me, let's come back to the marketplace in general, that farmers are now stuck with an old crop dilemma because they've got a market that's going up, and they don't know whether they're actually going to have a crop in the ground. That changes things dramatically from, I don't know, even just a month ago. What are you telling producers?
Yeah, I mean, the frustrating part about, whenever we dropped market prices so far was more so old crop than new crop, really, that people were frustrated with because, there's always a large marketing window whenever you're haven't even gotten the crop in the ground yet. But as far as old crop, you kind of feel like you were handcuffed. I would say now that you've gotten this rally, the amazing thing is that we haven't seen basis back off for the most part. We have in a few places, but, on a couple of the major markets we watch are still running the same basis levels after a substantial rally. So I think a producer needs to look really hard rewarding this rally. And if they want to stay long, you can do so pretty cheap with a limited risk, options play or something. But bottom line is I think rewarding a rally is something that we need to be considering very strongly.
Why is that the case?
Well, I think anytime that you see a rally like we've seen, you take December corn, for instance, 363.5 there on Monday, and we're 33 cents higher just 3 days later. That's typically a rally. The way I look at it, a rally is not a rally unless you reward at least a portion of it. I'm not saying a person go out and sell everything. But I would say that if people think the basis is going to hold together on this rally, or if we continue to rally, I think they're probably mistaken because there's a lot of corn out there and the system's not going to be able to handle all the corn that's going to come to the market.
So for new crop, let's switch crop years at this point. On stay with corn, same kind of problems they're facing, though most of them probably have not even tackled new crop sales at this point. Any reason to?
I think taking a look is probably a thing to do, but at the same time, what we've been trying to tell producers is you don't want to get super aggressive if you haven't even been able to plant yet. Obviously, the weather forecasts look awfully ominous, and potentially if you're in a situation where you don't get your crop planted or you only get a portion of your crop planted, and then we end up having several million acres lost to preventative plant. Like if we see a situation unfolding like we saw in 1993, you don't want to be sitting here with a whole lot of sales in place. So we like being long the calls going into the rally that we've been putting in place here the last month or two. You stay long those calls and then you sell into a rally and you keep the calls in the event that the market continues to go on up. I don't want to get overly aggressive, long story short, with sales until I get some corn in the ground and up and feel good about the way it looks.
Wheat futures are leading higher today. That's probably good news for corn. Is this just on the rainfall and potential disease problems that they'll have in Kansas and other growing regions?
Yeah, there's no doubt. In my opinion, on Monday, the reason that we saw a turnaround was the wheat market led the corn market higher based upon forecasts. And obviously, they knew there was going to be a lot of implications for this corn crop as well if some of these forecasts verified. I mean, we're talking 4 to 8 inches in parts of the western and upper western corn belt and northern plains. So, bottom line is that's wheat country. And, this wheat's far enough along that you get that kind of rainfall on it, it's going to do it no favors whatsoever. And wheat market's certainly done the corn market some favors here this week by essentially leading it out of the doldrums.
Any reason to think soybeans can rally very much?
Personally, I don't feel like beans are gonna be a strong rally in here. But at the same time, it's awfully tough to forecast bean prices. There's so much volatility in here. But I do think producers need to look at these prices that they're seeing. They're significantly better than what we saw just again on Monday. If it works on your farm, consider doing something with them. As far as your cash beans go, it's a gift that we didn't think we were going to get. We better be looking at it closely. Keep some gambling beans around if you want. But, for me, I just can't get real friendly with the bean market right now.
Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He's with Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, agmarket.net, out of Windsor, Illinois. Let's turn our attention now to the weather forecast here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Mike Tenora. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Mike, we'll get right into it. I think maybe we should start with today and then use it as an indicator of what things might look like for 5 to 10 days, maybe the rest of the month. Tell me about this afternoon.
Well, we're looking at a couple of thunderstorms in northern Illinois, and those are now progressing into Indiana. These are a harbinger of things to come, because later on tonight and tomorrow night, we're going to see more storms fire up essentially from where they are now and then on to the north and west.
And then rain really starts to come, I take it.
Well, we're looking for an exceptional volume of rain across the central United States over the next 2 weeks. We have a number of large and small-scale systems that are going to move through. The first one moves across the central U.S. Saturday and Sunday. That'll bring the first big rains to parts of Illinois on Saturday night and Sunday, beyond whatever happens here over the next day or two. Then we get into Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, and an even larger system moves through and brings a lot of rain to a lot more different people. After that, things will start to warm up quite a bit across a big chunk of the U.S., but that only flattens the jet stream, and that's important because it's going to allow more systems to move through later next week, next weekend, into the end of May, and we're just looking at some unbelievable rainfall numbers going forward.
So we've talked a lot about the amount of rainfall we've had. Can you put it in historical perspective and then think about what that means for planting progress over the next 2.5 weeks?
Absolutely. If you look at rainfall from last June through this May, we're going to smash the 125-year record by a wide margin over the entire 12-month period. So this will go down as the wettest June, May on record for the last 12 months in more than 125 years. We can slice it up a little bit more clearly and just say, let's look at January through May. How does that look? Well, we'll end up being the number 5 wettest on record. And we can just isolate out May alone and see what that looks like. And we'll be in the top 20 or 25 wettest on record. And this is all using a conservative rainfall forecast over the next 2 weeks. If we really end up seeing 2.5 to 5.5 inches of rain across the northwest two-thirds of the Corn Belt, which is the forecast right now and fairly reasonable at that, we're going to push these records even further out and we'll end up being closer to number 1 wettest over all these different periods. If you look at that historically, this is basically the reason that it's tough to plant corn. Even if it doesn't rain for a couple of days or you just receive a quarter of an inch here and there, that's enough to knock people out because you need it 100% dry. You need it completely warm. And for U.S. corn, today was only the first day of the last 20 that was warmer than normal across the crop-weighted average for U.S. corn. It's been wet. It's been cool. It's about to get a lot wetter, and this is a significant problem. If you don't plant 75% of U.S. corn by Sunday, which is May 19th, your risks to the U.S. yield go up dramatically. We've only had one crop that was much higher than normal, and or at least above trend, when we had that type of situation. That was in 2009. But 2009 was super cool in July and August. And if we don't see that, then you're not going to see this big yield again either.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Talk to you soon.
That, of course, is Mike Tenora. He's with T-Storm Weather in Chicago. I'm Todd Gleason.